It's been a focus of debate for decades. Does Bigfoot exist? And does he live in Idaho? Scientists and Bigfoot hunters will gather Friday in Pocatello to discuss Bigfoot and the latest on the legendary creature. Idaho State University professor Dr. Jeff Meldrum studies anthropology and anatomy. He is a specialist in human bipedal motion. That's actually walking on two legs. He's also been looking for evidence of Bigfoot for decades. It was back in 1996 when he first saw tracks in the mud that he could not explain. He has since written books and field guides and made an ongoing scientific study of evidence of Bigfoot. Dr. Meldrum joins me now by phone. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So we talked a little bit about how this all started for you, but why did you get so interested in the quest for Bigfoot?
Well, beyond the simple mystique of an unanswered scientific question, my interest was particularly focused because here was the possibility of another bipedal hominoid, one that resembles us in our habit of walking on two legs. And as one interested in the pattern and process by which that adaptation or set of adaptations has emerged in our human lineage, you know, the notion of another species to compare and contrast those conditions with was really a fascinating prospect.
And you grew up in the Northwest, correct?
That's right.
So how did that play a part in it? And I ask that question because I grew up in the Pacific Northwest as well. And if you grow up in the Pacific Northwest, you grow up hearing about Bigfoot.
That's right. Well, and at the time, I probably am older than you, I would have to say. And so at the time in Spokane, Washington, when I was about 10 years old, it wasn't that widely known. In fact, when the kids at school were talking about this movie that had come to town depicting a California Bigfoot walking through the forest, that was news to me. I ran home and grabbed the newspaper to look for the advertisement. So that was Roger Patterson's premier showing of his homemade documentary showcasing this 60 seconds of film footage. So it hadn't quite become the common household word,
mm-hmm.
but still there were stories. I mean, it hit the press really with gusto in about 1958 when large tracks turned up in Northern California and were picked up by the wire services and were on front pages across the country, and sort of the notion of Bigfoot was born in the public psyche. But it has much deeper roots, and especially in the traditions of the Native American populations, where for them it's just a matter of fact recognition that such a creature exists. It features prominently in their worldview, both their natural landscape as well as the cultural or spiritual landscape that they occupy.
So then in 1996, you saw tracks that you couldn't explain. Tell me about that. Like, where were you at and you know, when you came upon it?
Right. Well, I was traveling with my brother, and we had paid a surprise visit to a local investigator. I had heard of some of the evidence that he had assembled, and so we showed up on his doorstep. As it turns out, he had found some footprints that very morning, and I was a bit incredulous, to say the least, but I thought, we're here, let's take a look.
Right.
Went up. This was in Walla Walla, Washington, so we went into the foothills of the Blue Mountains there. It was in, late winter, actually, still, I guess, in February. It was still, but the snows had melted back a bit, and some of the roads were drivable in the foothills, and it was on one of those side roads, a muddy, undeveloped road, that the tracks were recorded. And it was an exceptional opportunity for me, being a student of footprints, to examine a long line, not just an isolated track or a cast of a single footprint, but this was a trackway comprising, 35, 45 individual footprints clearly impressed in the mud. So there was little ambiguity. I mean, there was no mistaking this for Bigfoot, and it was just a bear or something like that, or just a person out for a lark walking barefooted. These were 14-inch footprints that were remarkably clear, and they were either very cleverly hoaxed which, you know, the skeptics will jump on.
Right, of course.
Or they were the real thing. And as I looked at the details and I saw the evidence of animation and the variation in toe position and interaction with the substrate and, you know, behaviors, angle gait changing as it looked over its shoulder and sped up and ran on the fore part of the foot. I mean, these were details that just spoke to a spontaneous, natural event recorded here. And that realization started to really sink in because I was, I was on the fence. I mean, I still harbored some of those childhood fascinations mm-hmm. with the mystery and so forth. But I was, schooled in and trained as a scientist and objective and skeptical and as that realization settled on the hair literally stood up on the back of my neck as I thought to myself, my gosh, the Sasquatch actually walked by here last night.
Yeah, and you and you missed it, right? I mean, you saw
right,
it.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Okay, so talk to me a little bit about some of your research, because you recently studied some nests, correct, that look like gorilla nests in Washington State?
Right. These were found by a timber cruiser on private, company land behind locked gates, miles from the nearest road. He was marking out a section for harvest and stumbled upon these unusual-looking ground nests that were, 3 to 4 feet across. They looked like a bird's nest that was constructed largely of the blueberry, the evergreen huckleberry that's thickly distributed through those forests. The green boughs on the ends, up over 6 to 7 feet high, had been broken off and then woven, not just piled, but woven into a nest-like structure. He had never seen anything like that, being familiar with bear beds mm-hmm. where bears scrape, detritus or leaf litter and duff into a heap and then sleep on top of it as a form of insulation. And so, thinking, could these be Sasquatch? He contacted a local investigator who came on the scene, took a look, took samples, brought a couple of bear biologists onto the site to examine it. They both concurred that it wasn't evidence of a bear. And so we have since been examining hairs that have been taken from that nest that, at least in their microscopic anatomy, have not... cannot be attributed to any other form of wildlife. They're certainly primate hairs of some sort.
Mm.
We've taken soil samples and subjected those now to eDNA analysis. And in the first pass, the conclusion was that the only, primate was a human DNA sample. But that has raised some discussions and conversation about what are the risks of a false negative when trying to differentiate a very closely related species from human.
Right.
You have enough with these initial passes provided by such a kit, an eDNA kit. Is there enough information to actually distinguish between a very closely related, higher primate, maybe even a hominin that would have, maybe a half a mm-hmm. percent difference from humans in their DNA sequence?
I'm speaking with Idaho State University professor Dr. Jeff Meldrum. He studies anthropology, anatomy, and Bigfoot, and he will be speaking at a Bigfoot conference in Pocatello. Okay, so you are a doctor of science. You research Bigfoot. Do you believe there is enough evidence that Bigfoot actually exists?
Well, whenever the term believe is a very loaded one, so I want to be careful
okay.
here, because the skeptics like the ideological skeptics like to heap the moniker true believer
of course
on people
right.
in a very pejorative way, and so rather than the connotation of accepting something in the absence of evidence, you phrased your question well. I'm quite convinced that these creatures exist on the basis of the evidence that I have examined, over 300 footprint casts in my laboratory, this remarkable film, the DNA work and the hair analysis and identification that we're pursuing. All these different lines of evidence make for a very compelling case. Now, I acknowledge and recognize that, the standards of zoology require a type specimen. and you know, there are those misguided souls who will say things like the science starts once you have a body. Well, that's ridiculous. The science starts once you have a question and start gathering data and observations. And that's what I'm arguing, that even if the evidence to date in hand is not conclusive, it should be persuasive that we should at least be considering this very interesting question, that there could be species of hominoid, be it the Yeti, be it the Russian Almas, the Chinese Yeren, that might actually be species of hominoid or hominin that have survived alongside Homo sapiens in remote corners, in refugia, across the globe. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't come as a surprise, given our current understanding of the bushiness of the family tree and the remarkable persistence of some of those lineages, like the discovery of the Hobbit in Southeast Asia. You know, it's just only tens of thousands of years old, these fossils that have been recovered. And the scientists are acknowledging, as they sort of scratch their head, yes, the local people have been telling the story.
Right. They've been telling the truth.
There are these little hairy people up in the mountains. Yes.
They've been telling the truth all of these centuries. All right, so last question very quickly. So having grown up, I grew up in Washington State, as I mentioned, growing up in the Northwest. So I did. I just grew up. It's like, look, Bigfoot, there's evidence there. What about Bigfoot? Is there evidence that he could actually be in Idaho as well? Because it seems like, you know, they'd roam.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly. There's ample evidence. Idahoans tend to be a little more tight-lipped about it, at least historically.
We don't need anybody else moving here.
That's right. You know, in the age of the internet, even there aren't nearly the reports. I mean, I'm stopped on a regular basis. I can hardly make it through the grocery store without someone sharing an experience that they've had. And so, yes, of course, there. Wherever the sort of rule of thumb is, if a black bear can make a living in that particular habitat, then it's very likely that another large omnivore, like a Sasquatch, can. But they're probably very, very rare by comparison. So, for example, you bring up Idaho. There's 25 to 30,000 estimated black bear in Idaho. I'd wager there's probably 150 to 250 Sasquatch. And we don't have time to go into how I come up with that number. It's not entirely from the hip, but it's a working inference of their population density. It's a very different creature. It's a large-bodied ape that has a long life expectancy, a very protracted reproductive cycle, and it wouldn't require, I might say it more hypothetically, wouldn't require a lot of individuals to maintain this population, and one dispersed widely throughout the environment with very large home ranges.
Well, I really appreciate the conversation. I want to thank my guest, Idaho State University professor, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, who studies anthropology, anatomy, and Bigfoot. He will be speaking at a Bigfoot conference this weekend in Pocatello at the Warehouse. Dr. Meldrum, thank you so much for the conversation. It was fun.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.